Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning. My next guest is the political satirist Barry Crimmins. He's done stand-up for more than 30 years, and he's helped shape the modern comedy scene by giving a boost to comedians like Paula Poundstone, Stephen Wright, and Kevin Meaney as they launched their careers. In addition to his work as a writer and correspondent for Air America, he's written a book, Never Shake Hands with a War Criminal. He's also the subject of an award-winning documentary by his friend and fellow comic, Bobcat Goldthwait. Call Me Lucky received its premiere at the Maryland Film Festival in 2015. I spoke with Barry Crimmins back in July. We began by talking about a sensitive and painful subject that was no laughing matter. For folks that don't know about your amazing story and your amazing backstory, this movie, Call Me Lucky,
yes,
which Bobcat Goldthwait made a couple of years ago. In this movie,
debuted at Sundance in 2015.
Right, and here at the Maryland Film Festival as well.
Later in the year, yeah. What a great festival.
Too. Yeah, it's a great festival. And in this movie, you reveal, or you talk about when you reveal.
And I'm glad that you used that word, because I survived childhood rapes at a very young age, and I'm glad that you said reveal or disclose or whatever, because people will often say, you admitted your innocence. I always have to stop them and say, guilty people admit things. You know, I'm disclosing it, and the reason I disclose it is because I don't want to be complicit in the cover-up of crimes committed against me. And when you use the word admit, it sort of hands some of the guilt back to the victim. And so, you know, I have nothing to admit about that. And that certainly largely can apply to events we're seeing today.
So your experience, you talked about this on stage in the early 90s.
Yeah.
You had a conversation with an audience about this, which was the first time that folks had heard about it.
Well, what happened was I had just really sort of gotten to it and was dealing with it. It was right when the Rodney King stuff happened. And everybody was coming down on these kids in Los Angeles. It just sort of came out. I just said, listen, you know, a lot of things happen to kids. You don't give the whole story. Let's get some context. These kids live in one of the poorest neighborhoods in the country, but there's people, you know, whooshing past them up on the highway in Bentleys. You know, they're surrounded by opulence and wealth, but they live in abject poverty and despair, and no one is telling them what happened to them is wrong or the circumstances they're in are unfair. And so kids have a way to make sense of the world where they're in pain and no one's taking the rap for it. First they think there's something wrong, then they start to think there's something wrong with me. And then they can behave in a way that corroborates their self-loathing. Well, I had been through, you know, some of that, so I felt like it was the time to say something, so I did. I didn't talk about it publicly again until I wrote a piece for the Boston Phoenix a year later, but you know, right away I had all these calls from these tabloid TV shows and stuff, and they wanted to censor, and I just wouldn't even talk to them. A year later, I had more to say. And then eventually I ended up, the big part of my healing was doing something on behalf of contemporary children, which was the investigation I did of AOL, which was profiteering on child pornography trading back then, because it took a half hour to upload one picture. They had like wood-burning modems then, you know. So
yeah, this is in 1995.
It cost $3 or $4 an hour to be online. And when you start adding up thousands of people with bills in at least, you know, in four figures a month, they were making a lot of money, so they were dragging their feet and playing it dumb. So, I mean, I've always felt the cornerstone of that. Even though they've been sold, it's still blood on the cornerstone of that corporation. So, anyway, I ended up testifying. It was Mr. Crimmins Goes to Washington kind of thing. Or if you remember The Simpsons, where Marge Simpson was going after Itchy and Scratchy, and she's the one lone nut. Well, that's what I was with AOL, and I ended up testifying. And their lawyer was quite cocky. He's looking at me going like, what, is this a nightclub comic? And I'm looking at him going, yeah, I've dealt with a few hecklers.
Yeah. And this is all, by the way, chronicled in the film, Call Me Lucky.
Footage, yeah.
So
footage.
It's you and this AOL lawyer, and here you are, a victim of child sexual abuse,
yeah,
who looked into these AOL chat rooms. And
yeah,
in the mid-90s, that was sort of the way people organized. And you found that this incredible, you didn't even know this before you started looking into it.
No.
There are all these people getting together.
People were telling me about it. I didn't realize there's two kinds of chat rooms. There are these public ones and the member-created. Well, the member-created ones were all the, you know, where all the predators were hanging out. And so people said to me at the time, well, are you all right doing this? Can you handle doing that? And I just would say, I can't imagine how I would be if I didn't say something. It would be like opening up a door and seeing hundreds of kids getting raped and going, oops, I don't belong. Oh, wrong door. You know, I'm not going to do that. You know, I would much rather risk the disdain of everyone than be guaranteed in my own self-loathing. So I spoke up, and eventually it was hilarious. The AOL guy just cracked after an hour back and forth, and I just wouldn't let up on him. But in the movie, you just see the – and then when he finally got – he says, Senator, I want to stop you right there and tell you, at AOL, we have a strict three strikes and you're out policy concerning child pornography. And, you know, I'm like, nobody's a bigger baseball fan than me, but – that's a one-strike offense in any league. And yeah. He was done. And AOL changed stuff. What I thought was kind of great about it was I was doing, trying to do something.
Yeah, they got rid of this silly three strikes you're out policy. Yeah.
And they also got rid of the room. So they could have done stuff I told them they could have done. Suddenly, they immediately did what I had been asking for almost a year. So
yes, because we should make it clear that you were in touch with AOL directly.
Endlessly.
You were sending them examples of this stuff, and you were saying you've got to shut this down, and they kept stonewalling.
Yeah. So years pass, and Call Me Lucky comes out. And I really thought the nice thing about this is, you know, if you know how many times these kind of people offend. And I also felt that if you found people trading in that, you were going to find predators. And now you see that again and again, Jared Fogel and these other cases. What gets the police interested in them in the first place is they are trading child pornography. Again and again that happens. So I saw that as a real danger back then and said as much. But the thing was, I felt like, you know, there's kids that aren't going to be hurt that will never know they weren't hurt. And I'm never going to hear from them. There's no bow to take or anything. Well, years pass, Bobcat makes the movie, and I start hearing from these kids, hey, I was on AOL back then. I was a kid, and we loved being on AOL in chat rooms with our friends and stuff, so we weren't going to tell our parents about these creeps who were around, but they were scary. Then one day, they just went away, and I now realize it had a lot to do with the work you did. Thank you so much. I mean, it's been an amazing. I never expected it, but I've heard it dozens of times now, so it's pretty remarkable.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to my conversation with political satirist, comedian, and writer Barry Crimmins. I spoke to Barry the day after five police officers were fatally shot by a sniper at a Dallas protest. That protest was a response to the shooting death of two black men by police officers in a suburb of St. Paul, Minnesota, and in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I asked Crimmins to respond to the tragic events of that week.
Yeah.
You are a pacifist
from
way back. As a pacifist and as a victim of violence yourself,
right.
What is your initial reaction
have survived if I bought into the rage, you know? And I didn't become what I resisted. And that's why part of the big reason the movie's called Call Me Lucky is because I became a human rights activist rather than a perpetrator of human rights offenses. So I feel very fortunate. I also understand the strategy of pacifism. That's like get off the stage and let the jerks be the jerks, you know? Let the killers be shown for who they are and what they'll do and how low they'll go. And then do not respond in kind. Do not become what you resist. And that's what's basically saved me. I mean, people say to me, oh, my God, the work you've done is great. I think they should kill every pedophile. Well, I don't. You know, I was born without blood on my hands, and I intend to keep it that way. I don't believe that they should be killed. And people who joke about prison rape, well, Bobo will get them. It's like, you know who you're saying that to? I was raped. You know, I don't ever snicker about rape. You know, here's an idea for prisons. How about if we make them lawful places where the people who we feel really need to be taken out of society at least learn that on some level the law's there to protect them too, even in prison. Let's show why lawful, civilized behavior is good for everybody. Pacifism allows you to step out of the way and let people who are really behaving horribly to show themselves and to have the center stage in the spotlight that they deserve. So whoever fired those shots yesterday, you know, first off, if you got two sides shooting, now you have crossfire. And who always gets caught in crossfire? Innocent people. And there's not going to be crossfire in Beverly Hills. There might be in South Central.
What is the response to the family of, you know, Philando Castile, the family of Alton Sterling, the families of Freddie Gray and you know, Michael Brown? I mean, how do we stop this cycle? How do we prevent the crossfire?
Well, I mean, I think we have to understand that in many cases, it seems to me that a lot of what happens, there's some human frailty there. I think there's some cowardice. I mean, there's plenty of cops who don't shoot first and ask questions later, but there's too many that do, and I think it's cowardice. I also think there's this sort of phony state of siege mentality generally that now will be whoever decided to do this was amping it up. But I've been hearing my whole life, I'm 63 years old, you know, the white supremacists have been saying forever, there's going to be a race war, which means we want a race war. And, it, you know, and now, you know, I mean, this could touch off what their dream. So we can't let them win. And we have to remember that, you know, innocent people and generally poor people are going to suffer if violence escalates. So we have to be brave enough to not give in to the, you know, that urge. You're not a pacifist until you have the actual feelings that you want. And my friend Utah Phillips said to me, the late Utah Phillips, great folk singer, was a pacifist after his experiences in Korea. And he said, never again will I allow someone else to assign me my enemy. And he said, we assign blame downwards because you can't hear the response. And he said, you can't find out if you're a pacifist until someone who you could really handle hits you and you're going down and you realize you're not going to get up. And hit. And that happened after that happened. And I agreed with Utah and he kind of showed me the way. I was on stage one night and some maniac charged me. And I could have picked up the mic. It's a real simple thing. I don't even want to say it, but there's a way you can protect yourself on stage using the mic stand, and no one in the audience knows. But shins are kind of a vulnerable area on people, and just yeah. You know, so I could have done that, and I didn't. I let the guy charge me, and he hit me, and whatever. And then you know we got him out of there, and then I had to get up, and the audience is really nervous. But you know what? After a moment like that, it's this moment with that kind of tension. You know, I got a huge laugh afterwards, and I can't even remember what I said. But it was.
It's amazing that.
But I had to get past my you know.
Your instinct.
Right. Right.
But you know, but it's an amazing act of courage by my sights to, you know, have your experience. You were a little kid. You were like four or five years old you were raped repeatedly. And your response to that has been nonviolent. Your response to that has been to show who they are, to expose who they are. And the investigation that you began at AOL, the Cuyahoga Police
Cuyahoga,
Department.
Yeah.
Cuyahoga has arrested now since then. A thousand people they've indicted in this regard. So that's taking a lot of really nasty people off the street, at least potentially. And you know that's incredible that you've been able to
certainly putting them on the map and putting them under scrutiny at the very least. Again, it was just a thing that I don't know who wouldn't have done. I couldn't have done anything else because I have to live with myself. That's all. And so I don't see it as like, well, that was great. I was basically a coward because I'm afraid of myself.
know? Well, before I let you go, let me ask you about the election. We've got...
The problem is someone will win. Let's put it this way. The only time I believe what they're saying is when they're calling their opponent a liar. I think Hillary's a big part of the patriarchy and Trump is, you know, he's just, you know, the toupee of Dorian Gray, you know, just
is there hope for politics, though?
With white supremacy comes great irresponsibility.
I mean, you've been paying close attention to politics for a long time now. Is there hope for the political system? Because if we get to the point where we're so cynical about it, where we get to the point where we really lose faith in the capacity of government and politics to move the needle in the right direction, then what are we left with?
Well, we really have to remember that elections are one way to be political. But there's a lot of other ways to be political, and it has to be bottom up, like my friend Howard Zinn always promoted. It has to be grassroots, and then you'll scare them. And then like all the politicians who came around on civil rights, they jumped on a bandwagon and with a steering wheel in their hand and acted like they were driving it. Well, fine, let them pretend they drove it. We know that the people who got lynched, we know that the people who stood up that got hit with fire hoses and attacked by police dogs and put in jail. We know who did it, but fine. You want to the photo op where you've got the wheel on the, you know, that's fine. But, you know, we have to lead the politicians. And I'm tired of being told that I need a leader, because that's basically calling me a moron. I don't need a leader. I'm not on a field trip. I know how to go to the museum on my own. You know, I don't need a leader. That implies I'm a dope. I need a public servant who's responsive to an informed electorate. So what I try to do with my work is to help make that informed electorate come about, but then also to take the kind of actions on other levels, and it's sort of a daily basis where you see someone's being mistreated and you speak up, or you're just kind to them. People say, well, you're so brave to speak up. Well, I'll tell you the brave people who helped me, the ones who listened to me. It's a very brave and kind and courageous act to listen to people, to hear what people have been through. Don't just say, every soldier is a hero. Well, you know, you're kind of using the soldiers as human shields for bad policy, because when you question the policy, they start saying, well, you're going after the heroes. No, you're cowards using those kids as human shields for your bad policies. What I say to a soldier, I don't say thank you for your service is to endorse these horrid policies that hurt them and the people over wherever they've been sent. And, you know, I don't endorse that. But what I do endorse is listening. I go, how are you doing? What can I do? How's the VA treating you? I feel like one of the big problems of this country is it would rather create veterans than care for them.
The political satirist Barry Crimmins. The documentary about Barry Crimmins by his friend Bobcat Goldthwait is called Call Me Lucky, and it's available on Netflix. Crimmins will also be featured in an upcoming comedy special with Louis C.K. For more information, come to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Ahead on the program, we'll revisit one pastor's rooftop plea for voter participation in Sandtown, Winchester. That's coming up after a break for the news, but first, it's time for a Baltimore story with Gil Sandler.